You heard that Jesus and his disciples were in the area one day when you were at the market. Someone said that he had actually gone back to his hometown of Nazareth and said that, of all things, they booted him out. And someone else next to you says, well, you know, a prophet is never welcome in his hometown. That seems about right to you. It's kind of how it's always been. But in any case, you know that Jesus is in your area in Galilee. You've heard about Jesus. You've heard that he's a pretty good teacher, and you've heard that he heals people, though you haven't seen it. And you're not sure if you believe it or not. After all, this is the country, and people come through your town from time to time selling tinctures or cure-alls that never seem to hold up to scrutiny. But you're interested. And as you are in the market, you're hearing how other people are talking about Jesus, and someone says, well, wait a minute, you heard about John, right? That wild prophet. He was arrested. And when Herod Antipas was throwing a banquet, this happened just a couple of weeks ago, when Herod Antipas was throwing a banquet to celebrate his own birthday, he had him murdered and his head brought to him on a platter. And someone says, I wonder how Jesus is reacting to this news. And someone said, why? And said, well, because they're cousins. You know, and they're both prophets, and they're close cousins. They even share some disciples and followers back and forth. And you wonder about this. You hear that maybe Jesus is over down by the lake and his disciples are there as well. So you make your way down. And as you are making your way down to the lake, there are other people joining you. And you're in the country. You don't expect this many people. But there are more people coming from local areas just to find Jesus. They're your neighbors. There are foreigners, people from foreign lands. There are sick and the injured. There are people who are kind of important and people who are really kind of on their last leg. But they're all coming down to the shore. And down there, as you're talking to folks, they say that Jesus has been sitting out in this boat in the middle of the water since he heard the news about John. There are people standing on the shore calling out to Jesus, saying, Jesus, Jesus, come close. And his disciples are like trying to hold back the crowd and keep them out of the boat so they can give Jesus some privacy. Jesus stands up and looks and sees all of these people. And he rolls himself back in. And he is greeted by people who need healing. Now, you're sitting a little bit further up, and it's kind of hard to describe what's happening here. But it seems as if anyone who comes to Jesus receives the healing that they need the most. And that this is happening all day. And more people are flocking in. And into the evening, and the sun is starting to set, and you realize that it's getting dark and people are starting to get hungry. And up front, you can see that Jesus' disciples, his closest friends, are gathering around him, and there's some fuss. And they're arguing even back and forth about what to do. And up front, you see a couple of loaves of bread and a couple of fish. And you hear Jesus saying words over these, a blessing of gratitude for these two fish and these five loaves of bread. And Jesus asks everyone to sit down. And people sit down in groups. And they start passing out these two fish and these five loaves. And you look in your bag, because you were at the market earlier. You didn't get much. You got also a couple of dried fish and a loaf of bread. And you realize that other people in these groups are going through their bags and their belongings. They're finding fish or vegetables or bread to share. Some have a lot. They just came from the market, or they came prepared, and others have nothing. Yet in every single group, it seems as if those that have are sharing with those that don't. And the disciples are walking around with baskets, and there's so much sharing happening, and people brought more than what everyone thought, that these groups are placing just a little bit of their extra in these baskets. By the time everyone has been fed, there was more. There were baskets left over, because everyone had what they needed. At this time, Jesus tells his disciples to get in the boat and cross over, and he will meet them over there, because he still wants some time to himself. But first, he dismisses the crowd, offering a blessing, and people disperse. I don't know if this is how this miracle happened. It doesn't really report it here, and it doesn't really report how this miracle happens in any of the other three gospels, because this story is one of the very few stories that's told in all four gospels. But whether it happens through this radical sharing or through something more mysterious, it's still a miracle. And I think that there is so much happening in this passage, even though we've heard it all, if we've been in church for any amount of period of time, we've heard it multiple times. In fact, this is a really important passage. To early Christians, it was used as part of the communion liturgy. Every time that the early church, some early churches, celebrated communion, they would tell this story. In part because it's about abundance, right? That everyone ate and had their fill. And I just imagine that in the first century, in a rural area like Palestine, being full was not something that was very common. You ate what you had, whether you got full or not. But here they were so full that there was extra. So we can talk about God's abundance. We can also talk about the ways in this story that Jesus is able to heal. Notice, Jesus doesn't teach us anything in this passage. There's no great revelation of the kingdom outside of the fact that the kingdom heals people, and that Jesus continues to invite people in, even when it's not necessarily convenient, even when he is grieving. I think that that's a lesson for faith communities, because we are often in these modes of grieving, where we've lost someone that we have loved for a long time, and yet we also understand that there is work that needs to be done. I think that there is something about how Jesus resists his local terrible politics here. That this meal is essentially the opposite of the meal that Herod throws for himself on his birthday. Herod celebrates himself eating lavish food, and someone dies. This meal is had because people were hungry, and people were healed as a result of it. But I think there's also this bit about the disciples in this gospel message. See, Matthew's real difference in telling this gospel is that the disciples have a part in this meal. Unlike other gospel tellings where Jesus is the one who's handing out the bread, it's the disciples who are handing out this bread that is blessed by Jesus and these fishes. Fishes. And I love this communication back and forth. Because the disciples say, it's getting late, everyone's hungry, let's send them away. Let's have this problem that we're facing now become their problem. You know, it's easier that way. And Jesus says, well, why don't you feed them? And they said, we have nothing. I love that. They have nothing. And then they respond, we have two fish and five loaves. So we can ask, do they really have nothing? Why would they respond that they have nothing? Perhaps they're responding that they have nothing because they see this enormous need and they think that these two fish and these five loaves are not enough to feed 5,000 plus, 10,000, including women and children maybe. And yet, by blessing these gifts and allowing them to work their way through the crowd, everyone is fed. For me, that's the lesson today. That as a church, or as we as individuals, can often feel like the two fish or five loaves that we have are not enough. In fact, we can even say that those two fish or five loaves that we have are nothing. And become discouraged because the needs that we see in front of us are so much greater than the two fish and five loaves or the few hours and the $5 in our pocket that we have. And so we want to send people away. We want to think that perhaps these problems that are facing us can be dealt by someone else other than us. No, when I visit people in the hospital, I always walk back to my car through the second floor. It's the if you park in the hospital at all, I think it's the orange level. But on the second floor, there are some really good paintings that I really enjoy. And there is this quote that I love walking by each time. It says, I want to get it right here. Individually, we are one drop. Together, we are an ocean. That's how I like to think about this story. That individually, we are a drop. Together, we are an ocean. And when the wave works through this crowd, the movement of generosity from one person to the next, the idea that whether you are serving or being served is irrelevant because needs need to be met. That's the ocean of God's love. Now God works through each of us to accomplish really big things. So my prayer for us this morning is that we do not become discouraged by these really big things in our lives or in this world. Individually, we are just a drop, but together we are an ocean. An ocean that moves. An ocean that changes, an ocean that changes the beach that it crashes on. May we see ourselves as part of this bigger movement, moved by gratitude. For Christ's sake, amen.